You know I've seen a lot of people walking around with tombstones in their eyes. But the butcher don't care. Oh, if you live or if you die.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Daniel Werb, who is the co-founder of the International Center for Science in Drug Policy, who has worked extensively in the fields of HIV and AIDS, addictions, and the impact of drug policies on vulnerable populations. He's the lead author of the new study released by the International Center for Science in Drug Policy, The Temporal Relationship Between Drug Supply Indicators and Audit of International Government Surveillance Systems. Welcome to Background Briefing, Daniel Werb.
Thanks so much for having me.
And this report that you have been the lead author on that has been published in the British Medical Journal finds that in the last two decades that drugs have become cheaper, more pure and potent and much more plentiful despite an increase in drug seizures around the world. Now, and having seen so many pictures on the television news of triumphant law enforcement officers standing sometimes with disguises on behind tons of cocaine and piles of cash and an arsenal of weapons, this happens so often that you are reminded of Einstein's famous quip that insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different outcome.
Yeah, you know, it's exactly that image that sort of prompted us to embark on this study. I think, as you say, we're all familiar with that image of law enforcement officers with large seizures of drugs and guns and illicit cash. And so we wanted to get a sense of exactly what drug seizures, what kind of impact they were having on the actual supply of illegal drugs. And what we found was really, you know, as you say, despite the fact that seizures of drugs have skyrocketed in particular, seizures of marijuana by the DEA have actually increased 480% from 1990 to the late 2000s. Despite that, the potency of marijuana in the United States has increased 160%, and the price has dropped by 80%. So, it suggests that this kind of approach just simply isn't effective. And this isn't something that's unique to the United States. We also, in our study, found that this was happening in a number of areas that were consumer markets for drugs, including a number of European countries and Australia.
Well, just quickly going through some of the findings based upon on data from government databases, in the U.S., the price of cannabis dropped 86% between 1990 and 2007, while seizures increased threefold. In Australia, the price of heroin and cannabis both decreased by half during that period, and in Europe, the price of opiates declined by nearly three-quarters. In Latin America, seizures of coca leaf shot up by 188%, and in Afghanistan, seizures of opium increased 12 times over. So do you detect any sense that people are starting to wonder whether we should be taking a different path here?
Certainly. You know, I think the United States has out of nowhere become a fertile breeding ground for progressive policy and evidence-based policy when it comes to drugs. Mandatory minimum sentencing laws around drug possession are being repealed across the country, and of course, Washington State and Colorado have both famously set up regulatory systems for marijuana, and that's also reflected in changes in areas that have borne the brunt of U.S. foreign policy when it comes to the war on drug, namely countries in Latin America. So there's one small Latin American country, Uruguay, has recently voted to set up a state-run monopoly for marijuana. I do think that at this point, evidence, scientific evidence is one thing, and data that's, produced for a report or a study is one thing. But I think the public really understands that locking people up, seizing drugs, increasing resources allocated towards enforcement-based approaches just simply have not had the impact that they were supposed to.
Again, I'm speaking with Daniel Werb, who's the co-founder of the International Center for Science in Drug Policy. He's worked extensively in the fields of HIV and AIDS addictions and the impact of drug policies on vulnerable populations. He's the lead author of the new study released by the International Center for Science in Drug Policy that was published in the British Medical Journal. Now, if there is tell me what the other metrics then that we could be looking at instead of seeing over and over again these pictures of drug seizures and triumphant law enforcement people on television, and yet while this is happening, drugs get more and more plentiful, more potent, even as seizures go up. And by the way, just in the context of what you just said about countries and states taking more progressive approaches, on the other side, the country of Guatemala, for example, has been captured by the narcos. So it's possible you can move in the opposite direction as well, and literally have narco states.
Certainly, and part of the major problem is that there is just this incredible demand for drugs in certain countries, including the United States, which is one of the countries that consumes the most drugs per capita out of the entire world. That's going to have a spillover effect onto countries that are unlucky enough to be along the drug trafficking routes that take drugs from where they're produced into this country where they're consumed. In terms of better metrics, that's a really good question. And I just, this study seems to suggest that simply looking at the number of drugs that law enforcement officials can seize really will not demonstrate any kind of impact on communities that are affected by drug-related problems like overdose, addiction, HIV transmission, or drug-related crime. So for that reason, I think that it's time to start looking at different metrics that reflect the needs and concerns of communities and can help build drug policies that can protect the health and safety of communities. So what I'm talking about are metrics like the number of people who are clinically diagnosed as addicted to a certain drug, and the proportion of those people who have access to evidence-based addiction treatment. Alternately, metrics that identify the number of fatal overdoses that occur every year or the number of new HIV or hepatitis C cases as a result of injection drug use, I think would be terrific indicators and would really get a lot closer to what communities likely need from their drug policies.
Well, I'm wondering if anybody has done a study or stopped to think and asked the simple question, why do people take drugs? And that leads you into some very deep sociological questions about our society, how people cope with stress, and perhaps altered states in some previous cultures, older states were parts of religious rituals. So I'm just wondering why we are so terrified of altered states and so blind to recognizing that there has to be reasons why people take drugs. And perhaps if we knew those reasons, then we could start with an intelligent approach.
Mm-hmm. I think the data, there is some data looking at that. And what people have found is that often individuals who become heavily addicted to drugs like heroin, who become injection drug users, often have undiagnosed mental illness or trauma, and that their addiction is essentially a form of self-medication where they aren't able to access effective medicines that can treat their mental illness or trauma, and therefore, they move on to street drugs that are crude approximations of what of the medicines that they need. But your point is very well taken that there a number of reasons why people start using drugs. One interesting finding from Switzerland, which is a country that has just totally embraced a public health approach to drugs. They have medically supervised injection sites where people who are addicted to drugs and inject them can inject more safely under the supervision of trained professionals like nurses. And what they found was after they rolled these sites out and altered their drug policy to really focus on a public health outcome, that the perception of drug use among young people became much more negative, as drug use itself was defetishized, was de-exoticized, and became something akin to being ill. And I think it's starting to think about drugs in those terms and changing the public discourse to consider addiction within the lens of public health might actually go a long way to changing the perception of drug use as this wild and dangerous activity among young people.
So just in closing, then, Daniel Werb, what are you hoping for from the study that was just released and, as I mentioned, published in the British Medical Journal?
Well, I do hope that governments and, you know, national governments, state-level governments, as well as the United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime that run a number of surveillance systems on these issues start looking at these public health metrics in a more substantial way and start relying less on simply reporting the number of seized drugs to justify drug policies that have essentially failed.
Well, I thank you very much for joining us here today, Daniel Werb.
Thanks for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with Daniel Werb, who's the co-founder of the International Center for Science in Drug Policy, who has worked extensively in the fields of HIV and AIDS, addictions, and the impact of drug policies on vulnerable populations. He's the lead author of the new study released by the International Center for Science in Drug Policy that was published in the British Medical Journal. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program's available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.